Stand as you are able and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, would you call the roll, please?
Mr. Trapp?
Here.
Mr. Scala?
Here.
Mr. Thomas?
Here.
Mr. Pitzer?
Here.
Ms. Peters?
Here.
Mr. Treese?
Present.
Mr. Ruffin?
Here.
And we have minutes from the June 17th City Council meeting. Does anybody have any corrections, additions, changes, amendments? Is there a motion to
approve?
Mr. Pitzer has made a motion to approve the minutes as distributed, seconded by Mr. Scala. Any discussion? All those in favor of approving the June 17th minutes indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone with a contrary opinion, no. Seeing none, the minutes are approved. Are there any adjustments to tonight's agenda? Mr. Trapp.
Mayor, I would like to abstain from R10619.
I would make a motion that Mr. Trapp abstain from Resolution 10619. Seconded by Mr. Scala. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Without objection. I would also like to abstain from appointments to the Bicycle and Pedestrian Commission because of a family member within consanguinity applying.
I'll make that motion.
Thank you. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Thomas. Without objection, is there any opposition? Seeing none. I would also like to amend the agenda by adding after special item 17 or special item 719, a motion relating to the city manager. Any other adjustments to tonight's agenda? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the agenda as amended indicate by saying aye.
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 I would make a motion that the agenda is approved as amended, seconded by Mr. Scala. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? You'd think after 150 council meetings I would get that right. It's my pleasure tonight to leave the dais and join you for a special presentation. Good evening. We have the pleasure this evening to present the 10th Howard B. Lang Jr. Award for Outstanding Volunteer Service to the City of Columbia. The Lang Award was created by Leo Hill, Columbia's first city manager, who worked with Howard Lang, who was Columbia's mayor from 1953 to 1957. Hill created the award to honor both the memory of Mayor Lang and to honor someone selected annually to be recognized for his or her significant volunteer activity, their cumulative impact and initiative in support of the City of Columbia and its mission. We're pleased that Howard Lang's daughter, Khaki Westerfield, is with us this evening. Khaki, can you wave that everyone can recognize her? Now, delighted to announce that Maren Blevins, a deeply devoted advocate of our extensive parks and recreation system, is the recipient of this year's Lang Award. Maren has served his city well for many years. In the words of his nominator, Ted Farnan, Maren is a shining example of a person who gives back to his community. Maren has served multiple terms on the Parks and Recreation Commission and is the current chair of the commission. In the years before there were many competitive youth sports in Columbia, Maren took the initiative to start competitive programs for both soccer and basketball. He coached city sport programs for 32 years. He's volunteered for the Special Olympics for 37 years. Taking on significant leadership roles, and Maren has served on numerous other boards and commissions. Another support of Maren's nomination adds that his faithful volunteerism is driven by his vision of a healthier Columbia, saying, Marin is the most active commissioner. He studies the budget, he writes op-ed pieces on parks and recreation, and attends many events, including trail dedications, fundraisers for the Parks and Rec Endowment Fund, and city council meetings, and so much more. In fact, last week when I was able to dedicate our first bocce ball courts, Marin was there with the Special Olympic team, including one member that had just won a gold medal at the Shanghai Special Olympics in China. And another says Marin has personally taken it upon himself to make our community better, whether that's through raising funds or coaching youth athletes or recruiting volunteers or serving on various city and commissions. His lifetime of dedication to the city of Columbia is remarkable. Marin, would you join me at the microphone? It's my pleasure to present the 2019 Howard B. Lang Jr. Award for Outstanding Volunteer Service to the City of Columbia, presented to Marin Blevins in recognition of your dedication to the Columbia community. Now, a cash gift of $1,000 also goes along with this award. And we understand that you have chosen to have your gift deposited in the Parks and Recreation Endowment Fund, administered by the Community Foundation of Central Missouri. And we thank you for your even continued generosity, Mayor.
Thank you so much.
Would you like to say a few words?
Actually, I don't know what it's a pleasure to see Ms. Lang here. It's really great. He's a good man. So I want to thank the selection committee for picking me. That's wonderful. It's a total surprise. Ted Farnan, a fellow commissioner, put me in. I appreciate that, Ted. And I do want to introduce my strongest supporter. Stand up, my whole family. Also, I want to thank Mike Griggs, Park and Rec staff, and my fellow commissioners for all the support they've given me in the 14 years I've been on the commission. So I appreciate that a lot. How many anybody here a new volunteer of anything? How about older volunteers? Old meaning seasoned. Yeah, the only thing I can say, really, Mayor Teresa, is that the more you volunteer, the more you grow as an individual. And the more rewards you get personally. And you take them home and you cherish them. So thank you very much.
It is now my pleasure if, while they're flipping the podium, you know, over the last 90 days, the City Council has had a very intentional process to select our next city manager. We had two town hall meetings. We had 75 one-on-one interviews with stakeholders and not-for-profits and advocacy groups. We had over 500 online comments. We interviewed a number of candidates, selected two finalists, and a week ago in this chamber, debuted those finalists to the council. It is now my pleasure to move the Columbia City Council select John Glasscock as the city manager, and I'd like to direct the city councilor to prepare a bill outlining the terms and conditions of employment as city manager.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Scala. Is there any discussion on the motion? Madam Clerk, would you call the roll on that motion, just to be official?
On the motion by Mayor Tree, seconded by Mr. Scala, Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Mr. Pitzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. Trees?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Very good. Thank you for your willingness to serve.
Thank you.
Moving on to boards and commissions. There are several opportunities to serve the City of Columbia as a volunteer, and I encourage everyone to look at the city's website to select a commission that might meet your avocation or passion and contribute your service in the spirit of Maren Blevins as you dedicate in time to make our community better. Our first such appointment is to the Bicycle and Pedestrian Commission. The first one, there are two vacancies, one with bicycle knowledge and one with pedestrian knowledge. Madam Clerk, for the bicycle knowledge, please.
Mr. Trapp.
Robert Schmidt.
Mr. Scala.
Sam Phillips.
Mr. Thomas.
All right, just one second. Sam Phillips.
Mr. Pitzer.
Sam Phillips.
Ms. Peters.
Sam Phillips.
Mr. Ruffin.
Sam Phillips.
And for the pedestrian knowledge, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Trapp.
Kim Schwarzkopf.
Mr. Scala.
Kim Schwarzkopf.
Mr. Thomas.
Kim Schwarzkopf.
Mr. Pitzer.
Kim Schwarzkopf.
Ms. Peters.
Kim Schwarzkopf.
Mr. Ruffin.
Kim Schwarzkopf.
And for the Board of Congratulations. And for the Board of Adjustment, there's one vacancy and no applicants for the alternate position. We'll re-advertise that. For the Building Construction Codes Commission, there are 8 vacancies with certain categories. For the regular landlord position, we will re-advertise. For the alternate landlord position, Robert Jackson, who was in the regular landlord position, would like to fall back to alternate. For the regular master plumber, there are 2 applicants. Madam Clerk, would you call the roll?
Mr. Trapp.
Matthew Young.
Mr. Scala.
Matthew Young.
Mr. Thomas.
Matthew Young.
Mr. Pitzer.
Matthew Young.
Ms. Peters.
Austin Tippin.
Mr. Treese?
Matthew Young.
Mr. Ruffin?
Matthew Young.
So having achieved 4, would there be any objection to appointing Austin Tipton as the alternate?
No.
Seeing no objection. For the regular professional engineer slot, there are 2 applicants. Madam Clerk, for the regular PE.
Mr. Trapp?
James Watson.
Mr. Scala?
James Watson.
Mr. Thomas.
James Watson.
Mr. Pitzer.
James Watson.
Ms. Peters.
James Watson.
Mr. Treese.
James Watson.
Mr. Ruffin.
James Watson.
And for the alternate, is there any objection to appointing Fred Malicote to the alternate position as the runner-up?
No objection.
Seeing no objection. For the regular PE structural civil appointment, there is 1 appointee. I would move that we appoint David Weber by acclamation. And all those in favor? No objection.
Yeah.
Which leaves Josh Lehman as the alternate. Objection. Well, that was easier than it looked. For the Community Land Trust Organization Board, there are 3 vacancies. Again, we have 1 potential appointee. Would you like to continue to re-advertise that until we get a full slate?
Mayor?
Yes.
I spoke to Linda Head, and she would like to be appointed. She's committed to be at every meeting. The way quorums work, there has to be a representative of each of the 3 categories. She would be the home occupant category. It's a universe of 8 people, so might have been ambitious to bring it up this early, but she's eager to serve, and I believe in her commitment to show up, so I don't want to see her excluded just because
objection to appointing Linda Head to one of those vacancies and continue to re-advertise the 2 as those population?
Sounds good.
Seeing none, Linda Head is appointed to the Community Land Trust Organization. For the Disabilities Commission, there's 1 vacancy and no applicants will re-advertise. For the Downtown Leadership Council, there's 1 City Council appointee. Madam Clerk, would you call the roll?
Mr. Trapp.
Tyree Bindham.
Mr. Scala.
Daniel Gunkel.
Mr. Thomas.
Tyree Bindham.
Mr. Pitzer.
Danielle Gunkel.
Ms. Peters.
Tyree Bindham.
Mr. Treese.
Tyree Bindham.
Mr. Ruffin.
Tyree Bindham.
And for the Historic Preservation Commission, there's 1 vacancy and 3 applicants. Madam Clerk.
Mr. Trapp.
Stephen Bibby.
Mr. Scala.
Stephen Bibby.
Mr. Thomas.
Stephen Bybee.
Mr. Pitzer.
Stephen Bybee.
Ms. Peters.
Stephen Bybee.
Mr. Treese.
Stephen Bybee.
Mr. Ruffin.
Stephen Bybee.
And for the Integrated Electric Resource and Master Plan Task Force, there's one vacancy. And I would move that we appoint Dick Parker. There's about 6 months, maybe 9 months worth of work. It's pretty complicated material. He just came off of the Water and Light Advisory Board, and I see no objection to putting his skills and history to use on this commission.
I agree.
I'd agree. Objection.
Seeing none. And I appreciate Dick Parker for his service. For the Personnel Advisory Board, there's one vacancy and one applicant. Any objection to appointing Walter Lansky?
Objection.
No.
Seeing none. And that concludes our appointments to boards and commissions. Moving on to schedule public comment, there are several opportunities to address City Council. Those that contact the clerk's office prior to the agenda coming out on Thursday can speak at the beginning of the meeting for 5 minutes. Of course, we have a number of public hearings and then opportunity to speak at the end of the meeting. Our first scheduled public comment is from Frank Klakinga. Is Frank available? Moving on to Mataran Kumar. Mr. Kumar, how are you, sir? Good. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. All right. Whenever you guys are ready.
Yep. We are. Ready. Proceed.
All right. Society is slowly moving away from viewing nonviolent, victimless drug use as a criminal activity. This shift in mindset is significant. We now know we cannot arrest our way out of drug use or drug abuse, and our attempts to do so resulted in more dangerous black markets, mass incarceration, and its generational impact on families and the degradation of the rule of law. In 2003, Columbia led the way in Missouri in determining that marijuana use should be the lowest priority for law enforcement, and it's now time to examine similar policies for psychedelic drugs, which we have a clear and acknowledged medical use. As the abuse of prescription drugs and opioids like meth and heroin continue to impact Columbia, psychedelic therapies offer significant hope. Clinical research conducted by scientists at the University of New Mexico and Johns Hopkins found that psychedelic-assisted therapy may be the answer. Psilocybin has been found to help with alcohol and nicotine dependence when microdosed. Another obscure psychedelic from Africa called Ibuga has been seen to help heroin and meth users deal with their addiction. A study from UCLA and NYU found that psilocybin is efficacious for patients dealing with the end-of-life anxiety. Another study found that psilocybin can also help clinically depressed people when used in psychotherapy. Currently, MDMA is being used to help veterans with PTSD and is already in stage 3 testing. Psychedelics under the proper settings have been seen to help people appreciate life. And that same study, they found that 80% of volunteers stated that taking psilocybin during the study was in their top 5 most meaningful life experiences. They have the potential to really help people out when used properly, but because of the charge for possessing even the slightest amount of any psychedelic right now is ridiculously high, it repels people from seeing it as a viable option. We believe these and other naturally occurring drugs should not have criminal sanctions attached to their use. By decriminalizing psychedelics in Colombia, we have the potential to be ahead of the curve in drug policy. I urge you to make more history in drug policy by examining the issues and passing ordinance to reform to make psychedelic use a municipal infraction that is the lowest priority in our law enforcement. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your presence here tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on to old business, our first order of business would be Bill 17519, Madam Clerk.
Council Bill 17519 is an ordinance approving a major amendment to Lot 102A of the Copperstone Commercial CP Plan by approving the PD plan for Copperstone Lot 102A, located on the west side of Front Gate Drive and approximately 300 feet south of Water School Road, 4015 Front Gate Drive, approving a statement of intent providing that approval of the PD plan shall constitute approval of the preliminary subdivision plat for Copperstone Lot 102A, granting design modifications relating to entry door orientation, installation of landscape screening, installation of buffering, reductions in front yard setback, and reductions in minimum lot sizes, setting forth condition relating to the construction of Front Gate Lane, repealing all conflicting ordinances or parts of ordinances, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Do we have a staff report? Director Teddy.
Yes, we do, Mr. Mayor. Thank you. This property is common address 415 Front Gate Drive. That's the name of the public street that runs north-south off of Otter School Road here. The subject property in this request is 2.2 acres. The request is to amend a previously existing plan district. It was originally zoned what we used to call Plan Business District back in the late 90s. So that zoning has existed for some time, but this is the first time that a specific plan of buildings has been proposed for this lot. Overview of the site and both the previous image and this image, not quite up to date because this council is aware the Edison's restaurant now occupies this north parcel here. And then once again, we see our subject site on the west side of Front Gate Lane within the Copperstone subdivision, which of course is residential beyond those two lots. This began as a two-lot subdivision. And then in 2007, there was a third lot introduced, and that's what's referred to as Front Gate Lane. And Front Gate Lane is a private drive that serves as a access to both the Edison's parcel and this parcel, and potentially as access to property to the west. Just a view from the ground. You're looking on the left at a landing for a future completed crosswalk here. And the staff has drawn in approximately where the property boundary is on the south side, so you can get an idea of the conditions. What you're seeing here is what's termed the pedway, or 8-foot wide walkway that weaves its way through the Copperstone community. And that happens to be on common property. It's owned by the homeowner association there. The image to the right, you're looking at the property from Front Gate Lane, Front Gate Drive, two front gates to keep track of here. And that's Front Gate Lane, the private street that you see with the parked cars to the right. And then beyond where you have the heavier vegetation, that's an adjoining tract of land owned by others. So once again, the zoning has been approved a little over 20 years ago. Back then, there wasn't what's termed a statement of intent, in other words, a set of specific development conditions and restrictions. That has now been proposed and will be adopted with this ordinance. There was a Copperstone commercial plan that was approved in 2007. All that did was approve the design of Front Gate Lane, the private drive between the Addison's parcel and this one. That's the history. This is the plan that's considered for approval tonight, and it has basically two components. A pair of professional buildings or commercial office buildings are proposed, and then highlighted in color there are four single-family attached. So this is what you might term mixed-use development, and also kind of transitional between the single-family homes of Copperstone and the commercial that's at the street corner. Note also that the pedway does wind its way through this site, and what you see at the very bottom of this image is what was visible in that that photograph. The existing pathway is to be built through this development and then into the public right of way, as well as sidewalk will be built on the front gate lane and Front Gate Drive frontages. Now, commercial combined is going to be just shy of 17,000 square feet under roof. Plus, you have the single-family attached units. Access will be available both from Front Gate Drive and Front Gate Lane. There are several what we now call design modifications proposed. I'll just go over those very quickly. One is one of our new design standards is that entry doors should face a public street. The applicant has been has requested that be granted so that they could have the main entries to the building would face the parking areas there. There are some grade conditions along Front Gate Drive that help to justify that request. B and C in your ordinance, those both involve modifications of the landscape standards, particularly on the south boundary in between the R1 zone of Copperstone Residential and this mixed-use development. Our ordinance normally requires an 8-foot-tall screening device. That would be a fence or a wall in this context. On a larger side, a berm would be also considered to be a screening device if you could get it that tall. So they're asking that that not be required. Also asking that the landscape buffer, while there are landscape buffers that are part of this plan, that they not be held to the 80% opacity at planting, which is a standard that was new in the Unified Development Code. Previously, vegetation could grow to an 80% opacity in buffers between residential and commercial during a period of time such as 4 years. I'll note that for both of these design modifications, very strong public support expressed both in writing and spoken at the Planning and Zoning Commission's public hearing. Basically, the staff informed the commission and the public of what our standard buffer consists of, and they basically said, well, we like the plan the way it's designed. We don't want the standard. They pointed out that in Copperstone there really aren't fences other than short decorative fences, and they want to preserve that character throughout the development. This is a close-up of the landscape plan that would be adopted as part of the ordinance. So there's 38 plants along here where that that design modification for buffer is required, meets the requirement for number of trees. So there's 7 trees in there, and then a number of flowering shrubs and evergreen shrubs that are going to be part of that. So it is substantially landscaped, just not quite what our standard ordinance buffer requires. Similarly, there's also a lot of plantings, and you can see the outlines of planting beds here, professionally designed, that would separate the proposed 4 residences from the parking areas for the commercial. Continuing with the design modifications, there's one for a front yard setback that would reduce it from 25 feet to 20 feet along a street, and then 10 feet of setback for the residential lots. And this is really an artifact of the way they're going to be, those lots are going to be created. They're going to be individual unit lots. And so they just don't have a lot of yard space, but there is a lot of enveloping common area. So in staff's estimation, that was a justified design modification because there is a lot of lot area on this residential lot. Likewise, with the lot size standard, 3,500 square feet per unit normally required. And if you included the common area on which these buildings sit, that standard is actually met. So it's, again, just an artifact of the way the lots are going to be created for this. Planning and Zoning Commission, after a hearing, recommended approval of the proposed major amendment, including all of the design modifications that I've just summarized, and that was a unanimous vote. Try to answer any questions.
Are there any questions of staff at this point? Mr. Pitzer?
Just one quick question, and it's not necessarily so much about this development, because it seems like an interesting and innovative plan, but for the area in general, since the restaurant went in, you know, I know there's been a lot more, you know, pedestrian and bike traffic. There's a commercial retail development on the north side of Otter School. There's this proposal here. Has anybody, you know, looked at some sort of like crosswalk or anything across Otter School? There's nothing in terms of pedestrian access across Water School.
In which particular locations for that crosswalk?
In about that location, you know, front gate going across Water. In that area, do you know if anybody's
this area here? Yeah. So looking at, like, we have the new commercial that's under construction here.
You've got a lot more pedestrians going back and forth.
Yeah, I don't think we have that as a project right now. But,
okay. Yeah. That might be useful if somebody could look at painting a crosswalk or something.
I support that as well. Thanks, Matt.
Any other questions of staff, or can I ask the applicant to present? Mr. Crockett, do you have anything you want to add?
Mayor, members of council, Tim Crockett, Crockett Engineering, 1000 West Nifong. I have a presentation tonight, but I believe Mr. Teddy did a very good job of summing up the request that's before you tonight. I would like to add that the applicant, John Hall, has done an extremely diligent job of going to the neighbors. This council, I've been coming before this council, I checked the other day, this is my 25th year appearing before this council, and I've never had a client that has been that involved with neighborhood collaboration. As Mr. Teddy indicated, we are asking for 4 design modifications to this development, and some of those are because of the site, and some of those are because of the type of development, but some of those are also because the neighbors have asked us to not provide a screening, a barrier. They said, hey, it's okay for us to see a portion of a parking lot or a portion of a building. It's okay for us to have that. It's okay for us to have a less landscaping because the openness is what we want to preserve, and that open feel is what we want. But they did want some enhanced landscaping, which is being being proposed tonight. So there are reasons for each of the design modifications. It's certainly not to cut cost or cut expenses on this project. Quite the contrary. It's to develop according to what the site characteristics are, as well as what the neighbors are asking for. So the project comes before you tonight and has overwhelming neighborhood support. I believe the HOA is here to speak on that behalf. We know of no known opposition to the development. I believe that there was 31 participants or signatures to a petition on top of additional texts and emails that came in at later date. So there was a tremendous amount of neighborhood support for this project. My applicant is not a developer in this area, but he's actually a resident of the neighborhood. And so he takes great pride in the fact of what he's developing here for his use as well as the neighbors themselves. And so he wants to do right by himself as well as right by the neighbors and the city. And so with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Tell me what would have been allowed here under, I guess, C1 turned to MN. Tell me what that would have looked like.
It was basically all C1 uses. So you could go in there.
Zero lot line.
You can go in there zero lot line. You can go in there with any, you know, not necessarily a convenience store, but you can go in there with relatively dense, heavy commercial uses. And the intent for this location is more office-oriented type uses and then transition into the single-family attached that then go into the single-family detached units.
And then tell me what those, maybe go to that slide of the, was struck in the minutes about what you called two front-facing residential, those 4 attached units.
Mr. Teddy, if you would go,
tell me orient.
Well,
the
intent there is, you know, it's not necessarily a double frontage. What we're looking at is we don't want to have just the back of those units right there are not just going to be completely just packed full of barbecue grills and all
so
that.
So four-sided architecture.
Four-sided architecture. What we want to do is the back of those units, and the reason why they're at an angle is because they overlook the common space behind them. And so that's an element that we wanted to emphasize with this development as well. And so we want the
and
back
so those boxes are the lot lines, but you've actually
correct.
Staggered a
right.
door.
Right. Mr. Teddy, if you could slide to another. You had another slide there. If you
which
could.
One?
One before or after
there.
There you can kind of see there, Mr. Mayor. Yes, the units themselves will be staggered in nature that go through there, and they'll have a little bit of relief through there as well.
Approximate square footage of those?
About 2,000 square feet.
Slab?
Maybe. Yes, slab on grade.
And is four-sided architecture included in your plat?
It's not in the plan, but that's what we're looking for right now. We want to have covenants that are somewhat complementary to what the existing subdivision is. We don't want to have anything that's out of the norm on that.
And then the other interesting thing about this was they kind of have non-traditional sidewalks. You have a
correct.
Sidewalk in the front on, I guess, the east side,
mm-hmm.
and then you have an 8-foot pedway that's actually on the back side of the houses
that is correct.
Probably goes through some common area.
That is correct. The 8-foot pedway that comes onto our property from a common space. And so that is the common element for the Copperstone development. We want to extend that through and then bring it out to the street in its somewhat typical location.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Crockett?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone from the public that would like to be heard? Good evening.
Thanks for having me. My name is Tim Worstel, and I'm on the HOA board in Copperstone. And you guys have heard everything pretty much the way it is, but there is unanimous support in the community for the development that John Hall has put together and the plan that you guys have seen. And I just wanted to come up and just recommend that you guys vote for this. It fits exactly with the covenants in the community, the aesthetics of it, everything that, and John lives in the community. And so we've all talked extensively about this project and completely support everything about this. So just wanted to...
Thank you, Mr. Worst.
Do you have any questions?
Any questions? Thank you for being here.
Yeah.
Any further public comment?
My name is John Hall. I'm at 4307 Granite Springs Drive, and I'll try and keep this short as I can. I know you guys have some long nights. Honestly, this development was something that it was just out of care for the neighborhood. I've lived there for 8 years. My family's there. Our best friends are there. In one of those villas, I plan on having my parents there as well. And my office, something that wasn't said was my office will actually be occupying. So this will be an owner-occupied office building in addition to another neighbor will be there as well. And so we've tried to design this in a way, like I went through 43 iterations with the neighbors. It was fun. But it was exhausting, but it was worth it. I got great feedback from Mr. Zinner as well, and that made the plan a lot better. But honestly, this was something I was worried what could go in here. I was really worried. And so, you know, rather than just sitting back and honestly complaining, I went to my wife and had a 3-hour conversation about this, and she finally approved the decision to make this something that we could for the neighborhood.
Is your wife testifying this evening?
She is not. She is, as unfortunate as this is, the planning and zoning meeting was on our 10-year anniversary, and her birthday is like tomorrow. So I must really like you
probably
guys.
Get you out of here before tomorrow.
Yeah. I mean, at least like vote in favor just so I can go home and like say there's a reason for it. If you don't, I'm going to cry. But honestly, if you guys have any questions.
Interesting
I mean,
lobbying technique.
So if you guys have any questions, like I'm happy to answer. Like I wanted this to be a very thoughtful, like I did know that this was something that I thought you guys would support. But honestly, I wanted to do it the right way. I wanted to, you know, do it in a way where I got neighborhood approval. I went to planning and zoning or planners and got great feedback from Pat or Mr. Zinner. And so I hope it sets kind of an example of that if we kind of do this together. And like it did make my plan better, kind of even talked to one of the councilmen yesterday and pointed out something that made it better. So honestly, if you have any questions or anything, I'm happy to answer. But
and Mr. Hall, you, some of your employees actually live in the neighborhood or in the
area?
Yeah,
several of them do. And so actually, as crazy as it is, I know a couple of you will like this, but most of my employees bike. And I will walk or I'm very lazy because I'm 10 houses down from that. And so, yeah, it's kind of a unique situation where several of the employees live in the community. Several of them are in Spring Creek. Several of them bike from the trail. And this is a location that I was attracted to because my employees can get on the Katy Trail and immediately go off. And especially, I would strongly recommend, I thought you made a great point for the crosswalk, because I have employees that will be coming over there, either walking from a Spring Creek. We have a person who will probably be an employee in the future that is across the street on Spring Creek. So we do plan on it being somewhat of a, I guess you could say, a unique situation where people can walk and bike to work.
Cool. Good for our mode shift for our climate action plan.
Yeah. We had a good chat yesterday, and so I'll do what I can to help.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Any other questions for Mr. Hall? Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for your time.
Of course. Any additional public comment? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing. Any further discussion? Mr. Scala.
Just a couple of quick comments. I mean, I don't know how many years we've been working with the development community and the council in terms of interacting. And I think this is a tremendous example of exactly that. You've probably gone the extra mile, given the number of meetings that you've had. But what I really appreciate is the fact that you said that the product has actually gotten better because of that interaction, and it was well worth the cost. The other thing, just an observation, I mean, there's a reason for buffers, if you will, and there was a reason for some of the changes with screening and opacity and all the rest of it. But how refreshing it is to have folks agree on the fact that you don't need this kind of thing in some cases. You can really open this up. I can think of countless examples of unfortunate enforcement for screening requirements that create these canyons of fence lines along some of the roads that we have, and this is certainly a vast improvement over that kind of thing. But it requires the kind of cooperation that you've solicited, and apparently the neighborhood has participated in. I appreciate all your efforts.
Any further discussion, Mr. Fitzer?
Yeah, just a comment real quick. So, you know, I generally don't like granted exemptions, but, you know, with the uniqueness, I think, of this situation, I don't really view this as setting a precedent necessarily, but just doing something that fits, you know, what's going on here. So I think it's very appropriate. And, you know, more broadly, I think this is a great example of, you know, a mixed-use type of development that where you're transitioning between residential and you've got some office and some, you know, higher, little, slightly higher density residential, and then you've got some other retail and commercial space that's also nearby. And that's the type of, you know, sort of mixed-use type of development that encourages, you know, a lot of the things that we keep talking about here in terms of, you know, encouraging that accessibility to those services close to the neighborhoods. So I think it's a really good example of that, and I think, like Mr. Scala said, you know, again, it's a great example of working with the community and the neighborhood to do what's what really fits in with the surrounding area and is really beneficial to everybody. So, and, you know, the point about people in the area, you know, living nearby and working in the office, I mean, you know, you could even argue that probably the parking requirements are going to be excessive on this location as well. So, you know, I think it's those types of exemptions that, again, more broadly, when we have these types of situations, you know, we should look at, you know, whether those are appropriate, you know, when the owners and the property owners are working with the neighborhood to do what's right in those specific locations.
Anything further? Mr. Thomas.
Yeah, I'd just like to commend John Hall on his community engagement efforts and really emphasize that we do get good projects when landowners and investors really go to the effort to work with neighbors. So I'm all in support of this. I'd also like to declare an ex parte conversation with John yesterday about this project.
Anything further? Madam Clerk, would you call the roll on Bill 17519?
Council Bill 17519, Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Mr. Pitzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. Treese?
Aye.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
And moving on to Bill 17919, Madam Clerk.
Council Bill 17919 is an ordinance authorizing an agreement with Columbia Community Land Trust Incorporated for the transfer of real estate and reservation of homeownership assistance neighborhood development funding for city-owned properties located at 6th 4th Avenue and 19th 3rd Avenue, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Do we have a staff report? Mr. Cole.
Very good. So this is an agreement with the Columbia Community Land Trust for transfer of real estate on two properties, 19th 3rd Avenue and 6th 4th, as well as funds to create two affordable housing units. So it authorizes $48,000 for 6th 4th Avenue, and these are home funds, and 19th 3rd Avenue, it allocates $50,000. The land trust did take bids for development, chose R. Anthony Development, also has secured development financing, got two proposals, one from Providence Bank and one from Central Bank, and they went with Providence Bank. This is the location of the properties. There's one on 19th 3rd Avenue and 6th 4th. You can see that Sexton is the road down to the south. Garth is on the west side of that map. This is a breakdown of the costs. So total development costs, the city has already purchased the land, so that's down in the red portion, so that's costs we've already incurred. 19th 3rd Avenue was $15,000. 6th 4th Avenue we purchased for close to $6,000, but had a quiet title suit as well as clearing the lot from the vacant home that was there. So total cost for both these lots, one of them is around $169,000, one of them is about $160,000. We estimate the appraised value at the end of the project will be around $130,000 per home. Could be give or take, depending on how those appraisals turn out. The affordable price, based on our pricing method, that's 80% of the loan-to-value ratio. That's what we find is affordable to low-income buyers we serve. They typically range between $35,000 to $50,000 gross annual income, typically on the lower side, is about $104,000. So that's kind of how it breaks out all the different costs and what's affordable to a buyer. So the estimated appraised value I mentioned was likely around $130,000, give or take. To get down to that affordable price means the land trust would provide a subsidy at closing that's shown on the closing sheet as a credit to the buyer of $26,000, which would give them a first mortgage and base price is what we're calling out of about $104,000. So their total payment, depending on what their interest rates are and how that works out on the final closing statements, between $750 and $800 per month. That's principal, interest, taxes, and insurance, as well as the ground lease payment of about $40 per month. So proceeds at sale, what we estimate the land trust will get at sale, our HOAND guidelines that you all approved back in the fall caps that at 5%, just to make sure that we're not over funding the land trust. Keeps it at 5,223 for 6/4 and 4,476 for 19/3, both of which is just under 4% below the cap. So this is what 6/4 looked like before we purchased the home. It had a vacant, dilapidated home on it. On the right is the home design proposed for that lot. That's one of the rear ones on the Lynn Street cottages. Should be very similar. That's what we would propose on 6/4. So just kind of what happens to these properties after we make this investment. I think it's important to look at the impact of the work. Real estate taxes on these two properties combined will go from about $537.96 annually to $2,800 annually. So that's an increase of $22,000 if you figure that over 10 years. Household wealth generated, so two households combined is about $48,000 over 10 years. That's assuming the $104,000 mortgage at 5% interest over 30 years. With a resale at 10 years, assuming that there's a 1.5 annual appreciation rate, with them capturing 25% of that market appreciation. It'll likely be more than 1.5%, I would assume, but that's just a conservative estimate. And the increase in value on the city's investment, since we'll maintain ownership of the land, that subsidy value appreciation over that time, so the time that the seller leaves at the home for the next buyer, is a combined amount of about $31,000. So with that, I'll take any questions.
How many other homes do you have in the pipeline?
So the other homes we have in the pipeline are the Coolmore Cottages. That's 10 units. They're going through the final platting process right now. The Job Point has two under construction over on 3rd Avenue, just down from the one on 3rd Avenue that we own. We have one for sale on 804 King right now at the moment, and currently eight that are sold and in the ownership of the land trust. Well, the land is, but the homes are.
How long has 804 King been on the market?
That one has been quite some time. I'd say at least 90 days.
What do you think the hang-up is there?
It is a two-bedroom, one-and-a-half bath. We've had good feedback on that style and that sizing. I think the price is maybe slightly high. If you look at our three-bedroom, two-bath on Lynn, they were around the same price. So I think they might need to relook at their price.
Our Anthony development is at Rob Wolverton.
Correct.
Got it. So, well-known home builder.
Yes.
I'd be curious to get an aftermarket report on what his cost per square foot was and if it was as he anticipated when he bid it.
Sure. We have a title company that tracks all the disbursements that are paid to him and all his subs, so that would be very easy for us to do.
Any other questions of staff? Is there anyone from the public that would like to be heard on this? One before I close. Oh, Ms. Fowler.
Sorry. Good evening. My name is Pat Fowler, and I live at 606 North 6th Street. And I do support your passing this ordinance. I do support the new construction housing with the Community Land Trust. And I am one of those small donors who every month makes a recurring donation to the new construction fund for the Community Land Trust because I believe in its mission and its goals. But I'm here to talk to you about what I call the and. In addition to the new construction that we're creating for people of modest means so we can relieve some of the pressure on our 14,000 households that are housing burdened, there are also other homes out there. And another reason why I'm here tonight is because I proudly tell you that 10 years ago today, I closed on my house on North 6th Street. And my house had been there, as I researched the census records and the city directories, since 1910. It had been vacant for extensive periods of time over its history, and it had fallen into significant disrepair. I have those pictures. I'll send them to you because many of you have stood outside my house. A couple of you have been inside my house and know it's a work in progress, but it was substantial disrepair. And so that house is now owner-occupied at a price that is even more affordable. And yes, it's a long-term project, but we have lots of properties out there that are empty. And the bones of those houses are good. So let's also look at, and let's look at those houses, take off the parts that aren't working and put on parts that work better, and increase the number of homes that you can bring into the land trust and assist our families, and particularly those 14,000 households that are housing burdened. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fowler. Ms. Kelly?
My name is Pat Kelly. I live at 1007 Grand Avenue. And I am really thrilled about the land trust houses. I'm really excited that there's new building in the neighborhood where I live. And one of the things that I think have been really wonderful about the land trust houses is that they're building two houses on 3rd Avenue where they didn't put garages in the front so that it would be in character with the other architectural patterns on the street. And this is the first time I've seen the 4th Avenue house with the big garage and no front porch. And I hate to make a complaint about the land trust, but I really think that that is so out of character with the other houses on that street. And I don't know if it's too late at this point to do something to kind of tweak that so it's looking more like other houses along 4th Avenue, which have front porches, garages further back, and kind of a less real modern look.
Is it too late?
We can look at it. The 3rd Avenue house, we are going to have a rear-loading garage because we have that alleyway. The 6th-4th, I don't know if we'll have that same opportunity, but we could see if there's some other design modifications that we can make to make the garage less prominent. We can look at that.
Okay. Okay. Did you see your alley project on the consent agenda?
I did. I'm here for that tonight, too.
Okay, good. thank you very much. Any further public comment? Seeing none, a closed public hearing. Any further council discussion? Mr. Trapp.
Mayor, if I may. Wanted to respond to Pat Fowler's comments. We definitely want to move. I'm the liaison with the Community Land Trust and have been very involved with this whole process. Strong interest, I think, in the Land Trust Board with doing rehabilitations. It'll allow us to lower our price point and to have a lower income qualifying family buyers. Our reluctance, we focused on new construction at this point because the land trust is only a two-year-old organization and we want to build up our building and maintenance fund. We have a, you know, we collect a land lease and then we also take $1,000 for the land trust from each sale of the home. So over time, we're going to build a fund and we'll be able to do things like add a new roof or put in a new furnace. And so we've been hesitant to move in until we have an established group of properties and income and have more capacity to help our homeowners who might have to deal with a big expense like that. So it's definitely in our vision, and we'll be engaging in and through summer into fall in our strategic planning process for our next 3 years. So we've accomplished a lot. As the mayor gave the rundown, or Brandy gave the rundown at the mayor's question, you know, we're looking at coming up on 25 properties when everything that we've got in the pipeline comes to fruition. So we're real pleased with what we've been able to do, and we would like to grow in the direction that you recommend. We just want to make sure that we don't do it in a way that is where we can't support our homeowners.
Any further public comment? Hey, before we vote, we just appointed Linda Head to the Community Land Trust Board, but there were three vacancies there, one that had a term ending in 19, one in 21, and one in 22. Is there any objection? Would anybody disagree with us putting her in that longest serving term until we get someone so we don't have to reappoint her in December of 19?
First come, first served.
We usually get the one with the most votes gets the longest term, sure. So you're okay with that?
Makes sense.
Yeah, Linda has been attending meetings and has taken part in discussions about the land trust. She's definitely the most active and engaged homeowner that we.
I thought it was more timely to do it with this than at the end. Madam Clerk, could you call the roll on Bill 179-19?
Council Bill 179-19, Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Mr. Pitzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. Treese?
Aye. Would you like for me to read the consent agenda?
I can do it.
Would you read the consent agenda?
It's just painful. For you guys to listen to. Items on the consent agenda include bills 176-19, 177-19, 178-19, 180-19, 181-19, 182-19, 183-19, 184-19, 185-19, 186-19, and resolutions 103-19, 104-19, 105-19, 106-19, and 107-19. Bills 176-19, 177-19, 178-19, 180-19, 181-19, 182-19, 183-19, 184-19, 185-19, 186-19, and resolutions 103-19, 104-19, 105-19, 106-19, and 107-19. Mr. Trapp.
Yes on all bills and resolutions except for R-106-19, from which I abstain.
Mr. Scala.
Yes on all bills and resolutions.
Mr. Thomas.
Yes.
Mr. Pitzer.
Yes.
Ms. Peters.
Yes.
Mr. Treese.
Aye. And seeing no further new business, Madam Clerk, could you read the bills for introduction and first reading?
All bills are introduced by the mayor unless otherwise indicated. Bills 187-19, 188-19, 189-19, 190-19, 191-19, 192-19, 193-19, 194-19, 195-19, 196-19, 197-19, 198-19, 199-19, 200-19, 201-19, 202-19, 203-19, 204-19, 205-19, 206-19, 207-19, 208-19, and 209-19, first reading.
And at 3 minutes till eight, we'll move on to reports. The first report is the report from North 763 Community Improvement District submitting their annual budget, not quite within 90 days of the beginning of the fiscal year, but close, that then we would have 30 days from July 1st to submit comments to them if anybody has any comments. Second report is 6719, submitted by a PhD student from the University of Missouri on visitor perceptions of Columbia's dog parks, for which there are 124 pages of a very well-researched study of Columbia's impressions of our dog parks. Does anybody have any comments on the report? Mr. Trapp.
I think I'm maybe the foremost proponent of dog parks. it's been a big part of my political life, and I've seen the great development that's happened at primarily the Garth Nature Area Dog Park, where I spent a lot of my time. I discussed the report with some dog park users. The real salient part is there's a cry for amenities, and then we're kind of just maintaining the facilities that we have, uses our, even with the dedicated park sales tax, uses those resources. So I think having a higher amenity dog park with a membership fee might be appropriate for the next great dog park that we add to our system. I think after having a service that we've provided, for the 2% sales tax that people pay for the city of Columbia when they buy goods and services here, I think we should continue those services, but I think a high amenity dog park could be a very attractive thing. Maybe an in-house behavioralist that might be able to, if we had enough funding. You know, I think because when I looked at what are people's concerns about the dog park, unruly dogs at the dog park, and a monitor would bring some sense there, but they self-police pretty well in the dog park community. But there are just folks who need help that, you know, dogs, I hear them talking to dogs like they're kids and explaining and dogs don't speak English, you know, you have to use commands and there's some basics, you know, if we were able to generate resources, we had that, you know, I'm thinking about the services more like for dog owners, like we do for kids athletics, because a lot of folks, their animal companions are their family and they have that same, it's changing the way that our relationship with our animal companions. And I think having those services, but also generating revenue to be able to pay for those. That seems to me like the future Having, you know, Strawn Road would be, I asked someone, and you know, where would be a great place to put the next dog park, and I know that that will have a lot of synergy with the Humane Society. It's a nice isolated location by the one of the crown jewels of the park system. So those are my thoughts. Oh, and thank you for the agility equipment at Garth Nature Area. If the improvements just show up without me even having to track you down and shake you down for them.
Well, that was an Eagle Scout project.
We were fortunate
enough to work with an Eagle Scout on.
Excellent.
So we can do some things with innovative ways and working with our community and our partners like Eagle Scouts. And so we kind of steered this young man in that direction, and it became a great little project.
Yeah, it's just looking really good, and there's a great sense of community. And I liked how the study teased out the community-wide benefits and the sense of well-being. And there's a big early in my political career, I talked about my dog park brain trust, where I would just go to the dog park and vet all kinds of city issues and get lots of kind of grassroots feedback on stuff and make myself accountable to the public. So, I mean, I love dog parks.
Anything you'd like to add to the report?
No, sir.
Any other comments on the report? Tell the researcher they did a great job.
Yeah, here. It was really well.
It was
really
actually
well.
A great
really
report.
Well done.
Moving on to general comments by the public. Is there anyone from the public that would like to be heard on any matter? Seeing one person.
Eugene Elkin, 3406 Rangeline. Congratulations. We're at public comments this early in the evening. Congratulations to John Glasscock on your new position. I would like to mention that when I approached John, he did not know of this information. Someone holds this information, and I'm the only one speaking it. The city attempted to build a shelter on North 8th Street. The failed attempt was by the neighborhood. They did not want that shelter. But the resulting matter was to have four shelters in the city. One for men, one for women, men with children, and women with children. This past week, we've had several different meetings I've been in. We understand there may be something coming for what we call the teenagers' homeless shelter. If this is altogether possible, why have I stood here for 10 years waiting for the adults? And I specifically moved the men to the top because we know we have alcoholism, the drug addiction, the suicides, and the deaths that have resulted by postponing this effort so long that, hey, there's just one person talking for the homeless. Is that Eugene only? No. Everybody wants to see these people in a home. Currently, the homeless will be receiving, under Section 8, a home or place within 3 weeks. That's today's statement. There's only so many they can do that for. What are we going to do for those who have to fend for themselves? We've got to quit thinking it's men only out there. We've got these women, and they don't look, I don't know how to say it any better. The poor ladies look like they've had hard times. We have no idea what some of these people have to go through. And then to find out we've lost another round of deaths again, because it's happened more than once. I didn't say it happened just now. I'm just saying because of the 10 long years, we need to be doing something for mankind. These people could very well be productive individuals and get a job. An individual at one of these meetings said the likelihood of getting a job was very, very good. He came here from Portland, Oregon. I hope he gets a job as fast as he commented. We didn't have that to offer people 10 years ago. Let's hope we can continue to have this kind of economy, and please, please consider shelters. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Elkin. Any further public comment? Moving on to council comments. I had a couple things, if you don't mind. Earlier this year, we passed a sidewalk ordinance in downtown that better regulated how restaurants have tables and chairs on the sidewalk. It created a $100 application fee, permitting fee to give us a list, so we're not enforcing it as a criminal enforcement. But I've had a lot of comments from downtown restaurant owners, bars and restaurants, about that ordinance, and there's some confusion as to what is expected, what is required, what is fair, what is not. And I've been asked to request an administrative delay on the enforcement of those applications, just to kind of work through some of these issues before the end of the year, so we don't have those types of enforcement dilemmas. Would there be any objection to doing that and just kind of having a, sometimes we do a grace period when we have new ordinances, and there's a couple outliers that you know, maybe impairing the enforcement, or if you did a strict adherence to that enforcement, would prevent others from having that.
I mean, as long as there's clarification, there's certainly justification for it. If you can resolve some of these issues,
I think it's probably worth our time to make it more educational early on, as to, you know, you've got two tables that we didn't charge for, now we're charging for it, and other people are blocking the entire sidewalk, and just kind of working through some of those kinks. So if we have to readjust in the winter months when there are no adjustments, it may be timely to do that. So I'd like to request the city attorney to bring back an ordinance to establish an administrative delay in the processing of applications for sidewalk cafe licenses and enforcement of licensing requirements.
Can I just ask, do staff have any concerns about doing this?
I don't think so. I don't think it's going to affect how we do business if there's some type of delay.
Okay.
I'm fine. Any objection? Seeing no objection. The other thing is, 2 weeks ago, maybe the first meeting in June, we had a request from the St. Charles Road Development LLC on Somerset Village, and one of the suggestions I made was to add a public member to the Transportation Development District, or a city appointee, if you will, to that Transportation Development District, in addition to the finance director, who is we're collecting all the money and administering all the money. That has now been platted and filed. Do you want the city clerk to advertise for that? Can we go recruit someone and bring that person back for appointment to that TDD? It's kind of an arcane little thing. I just went through it with 763 CID, and I think there's probably a short list of people that would be good advocates, good consumers for, or good advocates for consumers on that TDD.
We could reach out and certainly encourage folks to apply for a particular position. Is that what you're?
Or do you want to apply? Do you want to advertise for?
Well, I was thinking. I mean, that's the procedure for most of how we handle things. But I think we could encourage.
It's rather unique. We've never had a TDD slot.
So I guess my recollection of that was the intent was for a city employee, whether it's somebody from Public Works or legal or somebody who, you know, would be administering that area, not collecting the funds, but would be directly involved with administering the area, that would be on there. That's how I remembered it. Now maybe I misunderstood.
Well, these TDDs are typically beyond the control of the city. I mean, there's some negotiating that goes on, but I don't have a...
My main priority for doing it was to have a... After reading the state audit on TDDs, was to have a disinterested party participating on that, almost as an advocate, as a representative of either the city or the consumer on there, as opposed to just property owners and the developer being on the TDD while the city is doing all the work, having any vote.
Parenthetically, I mean, when it comes to TDD, one of the most amazing episodes, I think, several years ago was to attend a series of TDD meetings. There was about four, and they were held in less than an hour. And they were the same
hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, right. A tremendous amount of money, and they were all run by the same folks. I mean, it was the same crew. They didn't even have to get up from the table. It would be nice to have a set of eyes on that, you know, in terms of almost like a liaison. But I think that's a position that could be very useful.
So there was some uniqueness about this situation, where you wanted to do that, right? I'm trying to remember the details, yeah.
Nothing unique about it other than we've never had the mechanism to do it. The only thing unique about this one is that they haven't collected any sales tax.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because there's no sales tax generator yet.
Right. So this would be, so you'd be setting a precedent for future TDDs. That
I don't know about that, but they rarely come to us because TDDs are judge-approved tax increases. They go to the circuit court.
This came to us because there was that development agreement,
because
right?
There was a development agreement about what type of property could locate there.
It's the intergovernmental agreement contained a provision that the city council could appoint one of the owner's representatives on the TDD. Because the TDD statute actually requires you to be a property owner or a resident of the TDD. And so the owner agreed that they would, in fact, appoint as one of their representatives someone that the city council designates. The city council also, under the TDD law, has the right to have a non-voting liaison attend those meetings and be appointed and receive information and provide feedback to the board as well. So you can do two things if you want to. Currently, the city council does not do that with any of the other TDDs. We don't have a non-voting liaison appointed at this time, but you could do that on any TDD. This particular one has this voting member provision. The interesting thing, or the probably the complication that arises, is that when setting as a member of that board of directors, that individual will act in a fiduciary capacity as is related to the TDD. So won't necessarily always be representing the city's interest, but will act in a fiduciary capacity because that's the role of a board of directors. Can take into account and provide feedback as it relates to all of the things that the mayor described as well, though.
I think advertising it makes sense. Doesn't Fine. Preclude us from reaching out to encourage someone of a particular interest to apply.
All right. Sounds good. Any other council comments, Mr. Scala?
Yeah, I just have one. At my last office hours last Saturday, there was a community member brought to my attention that Mr. Trapp had actually asked at the June 17th meeting about a West area plan. And I know you're aware of it. And we have talked over the years about area plans. The East area plan was very successful years ago. I participated in some of that, even some of the county participation in some of these area plans, sub-area plans. Just wondering where that is and if we're moving on that. And I think that's something that I think there would be interest in, on the city council to encourage.
Well, I know it's on Tim's list to get done. It's just he's been working on, I think, medical marijuana and short-term rentals and, sure. and those kind of things that are kind of a higher priority right now to get those accomplished. So, but it is on his list.
I believe there's going to be a report at the next council meeting.
Is that right? Well, yeah. That's what I wanted to know. I just am curious as to where that is. That's all. That's all I have.
Great. Mr. Trapp.
Thank you. I've got three things. One, we all received an email from Kathy Operod about an incident with the police department. So I just wanted to follow up in regards to, there was a lot to unpack in her stuff, and I've seen some of the email chains. But the thing that I'm most interested in is the internal affairs report, which I think I read in one of the chains that after an internal affairs report is closed that it becomes a public record. And so I just wanted to see about her clear request for if that's incorrect, then I could get some correction on that. But just if it is an open record to, or whatever can be opened, I just want to know just kind of time frame, if that can be shared, if it can be shared, and what's moving forward on it.
If it can be shared, we'll find out. I haven't talked to Chief Jones about it at this point. He was going to get back with me on it, and I haven't talked to him about it yet.
Okay. She's been contacting me yep. on a daily basis, and so I told her that I would follow up at this meeting. And I take it all into context, but I felt like there was that we should be able to answer the question of whether it's an open record, and if it is an open record, provide that. Secondly, there was comment on psilocybin, and I've seen a lot of the research. It's very promising, especially in end-of-life issues. And there's been a larger kind of movement, both the right to try as far as pharmaceuticals, and then there's also, you know, there's a changing societal views about, especially people who are struggling with coming to terms with impending death, and there's powerful research there. I would like to see a report from, or I'd like to have the Board of Health weigh in on this issue. I know other communities have moved forward, something along the lines of our decriminalization that we did with cannabis many, many years ago. If that's appropriate to take that approach with psilocybin. And then lastly, I wanted to thank Stacey Wiedemann, who's provided great support, having to, normally we have two fellows who provide our direct administrative support. We were down one when Chris Klubine got recruited to bigger and greater things, and I've been working with Stacey, and I understand that we've hired a new individual. And so I want to thank her for her great service, having to do two jobs, really. There's been, and I want to thank Mr. Glasscock, who through his interim city manager status has been really great about answering questions and following up. And I recognize that there's a whole complicated city. There's seven of us. We're not the only persons that answers questions. So I appreciate the, in general, timely response and responsiveness to this stuff. It's hard for, it's hard to do what we do, you know, as citizens. And you make us look good when we're able to respond to requests and find out information and move things along. So thank you. Thank you.
It's staff that does the work. Thank you.
Thomas.
Yeah, I'll echo Mike's comment. Thanks, Stacey, for that. And then also thanks, Stacey and Heather Cole and Janet Godin, for helping coordinate the hosting of the Missouri Active Transportation Summit here in City Hall and in the Armory. And I think it's going to be in the Boone County Chamber as well. That's going to take place on Friday, August the 9th. The Missouri Bicycle Pedestrian Coalition, which hosts this event, has been growing in building advocacy support for alternative transportation the last several years. And this statewide summit has been held in Jefferson City the last two or three years, and it's coming to Columbia this year. Encourage you to think about attending. Thanks very much to Carl for agreeing to serve the ceremonial duty of welcoming people in Brian's absence from town. But do hope that people can think about attending that. We'll have about 150 advocates for alternative transportation from across the state.
Any further public comment? Seeing none, at 8:20, I move that we adjourn.
Second.
Sun's still up.
The sun is still up.
That's something.